Tape is on, folks.
Oh, we'll, now we have to behave.
You want to.
We'll call the Conservation Partners Grant meeting to order. We have a review of the agenda. Is there a motion on the agenda? We got a couple of, one addition. You can add a 2.5 in there. We'll have to approve the minutes when we're done on the agenda. Any more discussion? None? Approval on the agenda, say aye.
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 Good. Review of the minutes. Anybody got any changes or alterations? I have one. It's on the discussions of the grants program on the second back page. It's the second line from the bottom of the big paragraph. And it says in there that that the group had kind of come to the understanding that the funds would be distributed on a reimbursement basis. And I thought that when we were dealing with the small grants program, we talked about these small outfits not having those monies to be able to pay for the project and then be reimbursed. So I think if that is the consensus, we need to change that, to something less than funds distributed on a reimbursement basis. Or are we going to do something different for the small grant, the smaller grants in the program versus the larger small grants? Because if somebody applies for a $100,000 grant, they're not going to have $100,000.
If they've only got $10,000.
We need to do something different in that wording.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I suggest that the word should be changed to may.
Okay. Yeah. Everybody good with that? Any other questions on the minutes? Okay. Next on our agenda is...
You want to vote on
the minutes? Okay, I'm sorry. Motion to approve the minutes as amended?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Now we're on to number three, public comment. We have some people that have requested some time to speak. I'm assuming we have the list of those. Or do we have any?
We have only one. And that's Nancy Fashing from the Southwest Initiative.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
I am here tonight to let you know that we at the Southwest Initiative Foundation had heard that there was some discussion about who would be an appropriate organization to administer the Conservation Partners Grant Program. So I'm here tonight to give you some information on the Southwest Initiative Foundation and the initiative foundations in general, and to let you know that we are interested, and I think we have the ability to administer the grant program if you would want us to do that. So I will hand these around. Just a little bit more paper.
Nancy, is this Brad Cobbs?
He works with us, yes.
Okay.
Yep. So Brad is the one that let me know that there was discussion about this last meeting.
Mr. Chair, Nancy, is your organization regionally located or statewide? And if they are regionally located, can you give me a sense of, I mean, obviously your title is Southwest.
Sure.
I don't know if that's Southwest Kitson County or...
That is the southwest corner of the state. So the Southwest Initiative Foundation serves the 18 counties of Southwest Minnesota. We have 5 sister organizations that serve the surrounding areas of Greater Minnesota. So, to give you a...
Did this foundation have a different name 4 or 5 years ago?
Southwest Minnesota Foundation.
Okay, because
yes.
I...
Yeah.
Yep. They've... This entity's been around for quite some time.
23 years.
Okay.
Yes. We were formed in 1986. How many I have? By the McKnight Foundation. When the economy was where it was at in 1986, they wanted to serve Greater Minnesota and allow they broke the state up into 6 geographic areas, excluding the metro area. and we were able to apply for funding from them. And we are a unique experience. There's no other philanthropic model like this in the United States, in the world. So Minnesota is unique with this. There's a description of what the initiative foundations are on this page. So I come from Southwest Initiative Foundation. Our other sister organizations come from across the state. We are located in Hutchinson. There is another regional center in Owatonna. Southern Initiative, Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation is in Owatonna. The Initiative Foundation is in Little Falls. West Central Initiative is in Fergus Falls. Northwest Minnesota Foundation is in Bemidji, and Northland is in Duluth. The metro McKnight didn't have an initiative foundation for the metro area because they serve that themselves. So we're spread out. We cover all corners of the state. We weren't sure how you wanted to have the process work. If you wanted one lead organization to take control and work with the other partners so that you would work with one organizing body, or if you would be interested in working, coming to the table with a number of us and working that way. We've had quick conversations, so we haven't had developed in dialogue about what would happen with how the program would be administered, because we don't know exactly where you want to go with this, how you want it to work, and how you want it to look. But I do know that everyone expressed interest in helping be a partner on this. We think it's a great opportunity for the state and for the communities that we serve. For the metro area, we would be, you know, we could work with any appropriate agency. I think there are several in the metro area. And we have great partnerships. So we've been doing this for a long time. We have a grant program of our own. All of the initiative foundations do. I'm the grants officer at the foundation, so I work with the grants that go out of our foundation. We have grant guidelines that we adhere to when awarding grants. We also have a pre-application questionnaire online. That's the initial step of how people enter our grant system. But we could certainly, and we can certainly work through anything that we need.
Like, Mr. Chair, how big is your grant making on an annualized basis?
$1 million.
Okay, and that's a pass through from the the McKnight Foundation.
No, we're independent of McKnight. So they established the foundations, and if you think of a parental relationship, it's similar to that. So they started us, got us going, but now we're independent, and we have our own endowment, and we work with them, they mentor us, that type of thing, but we're independent of them, and we set our own guidelines. We have our own board of directors and that type of thing.
And what's the nature of the grants that you're giving? That's
okay. Right now, we have a focus on the aging population. We have community and designated funds. So we have 18 community foundations that are affiliate funds of ours, along with designated grants that would be like donor-advised type funds, that type of thing. We also have the READY program, which is the Renewable Energy Development Initiative. So we make grants for renewable energy development. And we also have the Early Childhood Initiative. So we work with communities to create awareness about our youngest children. That's just what Southwest does. All the other ones have their own priorities based on what the needs of their region are. With the exception of the Early Childhood Initiative, each of us partner in that program to raise the whole bar for early childhood in our state.
Mr. Chair, Nancy, when you say $1 million, you're speaking about Southwest.
Right.
And overall, do you have an awareness of all of the funds? Because obviously what we would be looking for is a statewide
right.
program of statewide impact.
Right.
I have a couple questions. So how big is overall, if you know?
Okay.
Secondly is, what's your experience in conservation grants administration? And then the third question is, how much does it cost? What's the administrative cost
okay.
component?
Okay. Well, I don't have the totals on what all of the other industry foundations do for their grants. And I can certainly get that for you if you'd like. The experience we have in specifically conservation grant making, we administer grants according to their guidelines. So specifically for conservation grants, we don't have a priority around that, so we don't administer those. But once criteria is established and guidelines are written, we follow those guidelines and we're used to doing that kind of thing.
Okay. The third question was cost.
Oh, cost. It depends on what we have to do, honestly. So we've put out numbers just trying to decide if this is what we should do, and we aren't sure. So we'd have to probably take a look at what the parameters of the program would be and how much administration there would be involved. Potentially 5%, 10%. We're just, you know, I think we'd have to work through that if we're.
Thank you.
Wayne?
Since you don't have expertise, is really not in conservation, you'd have to be looking at some partners to do those things for you. Who would be the certifying completion of a project? If we had a project, for instance, a grassland project down in the southeast of Minnesota, how would you go about certifying its completion that it was done accurately? Would you have to, once again, go through another partner?
Typically, with our grant programs, we have we go through the process of doing, depending on the level of the award, we go through the process of a site visit initially, and then when they are ready to receive the monetary award, we ask them to sign the grant agreement that specifies that they will do what they said they would do, and then at the completion, we do ask for a final report in that, taking a look at lessons they learned, that the project was complete, and that they spent the money appropriately and accordingly, and all the money, that kind of thing.
Thank you.
So there's a whole process in place.
Let's take it one step further. If you had a 100-acre parcel that we were going to do a restoration on or put it into a permanent conservation easement, would you go so far as to, like, find the contractors with the seeding equipment, the seed sources, doing the actual contracting work after it's done, do the registration of that land into the title indicating the easement? Do you have that capability to go that far?
I guess it would depend on how the program was set up to administer the dollars. If that was on the grantee side of thing, if that's something that the grantee was to do, then we would make sure that that was completed. But as an administrator of the grant program, I don't know that, I guess that would have to be a defined role if we were in that position.
Any more questions? Well, thank you for coming.
Sure. There's a little bit of information about Southwest specifically, and then all the industry foundations.
We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else, any other public comment that anybody came needs a minute or two? Number four on our list, and this is a gentleman that I visited with, Don Waggy. He is a representative from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. And basically the reason that I contacted him is when we're trying to decide who's going to administer our small grants program, I wanted to see what was available or an example of what was available. Obviously, Nancy is another example of what's available in having what I would call a very disconnected third party administer our grants program. And Bill has explained to me that the Office of Administration from the state can do it. You know, the DNR probably could do it. You know, and I wanted to find out or allow us to find out what was available if we used basically a totally independent third party. And so Don is going to come and make his explanation of what you know, maybe a simpler explanation, but what they might be able to do as far as administer, as a possible administrator of our grants program.
Okay, thank you. All right. I'm Don Waggy. I'm with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk to the council today. I appreciate a big crowd. I unfortunately am not really ready with all the materials for it, but anybody that wants any of the materials, if you give me, or this is Todd Hogarth, my assistant director, if you give either one of us your information, we'll be happy to give you any of the information that we're distributing here tonight. The National Fish and Wildlife Foundation was established. Hopefully this thing is working. Maybe I'll just turn it this way there. Technology.
Turn the page down.
There we go. Okay. It was established in 1984 by Congress to be the official foundation of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Over the years, we've increased our function and worked with many other natural resource agencies in the United States government. But we're a non-federal, non-profit, 501c3 organization. Todd and I do not work for the federal government, even though we get appropriations from them. We don't do advocacy, lobbying, litigation, and we have no membership. And what we do is we support conservation by creating partnerships and using our appropriated dollars to try and bring more money to conservation. And one of the gimmicks that Congress put into our operation is that we have to raise our own operating expenses. Every year we get about $25 million from Congress, but we can't use any of that money for operations. So we have to always raise our own.
Don, do you have a board?
Yes, we do. I'm sorry, I should have brought a list of our board, but we have a board. Our board is appointed by the Secretary of the Interior and the Secretary of Commerce. We have three regions. Todd and I are here in St. Paul, and as you can see, we have a western region and an eastern region as well. What we do... Well, what we really try to do is identify emerging issues and opportunities. We try to promote innovative conservation approaches, bring stakeholders to the table. One of the things that we do a lot of is try to bring our federal partners together with non-government organizations. We do seed funding, we do ongoing funding, and we support partners with technical assistance. Our essence, essentially, is to be like a community foundation, if you're familiar with that, like the Southwest Community Foundation, because we create separate funds. Scott, if you won the lottery tomorrow and became fabulously wealthy, you could establish a fund with us for any purpose you wanted. You could say, you know, we're going to do the raw fund for pheasants. We're going to do the raw Minnesota fund. We're going to, you know, anything you want, a species, a geography, a habitat type, whatever. So we all work with funds. And so what that does, it gives us the ability to, you know, impact certain areas. Some of the bigger funds are ones that we get appropriated from Congress, like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service gives us $7.5 million a year. So we direct that mostly toward migratory birds, for example. The Forest Service gives us about $3 million a year, so, of course, that's toward forestry, permanent cover, things like that. So what we do is create funds, administer account, generate new money for conservation. Sometimes we provide a vehicle for fines and penalties to reach the ground. A lot of times if there's a fine or penalty, sometimes mitigations, you know, we get the money instead of the money going to the United States Treasury. And we ensure fiscal accountability. Because we get money from different agencies in the United States government, at any one time we could have eight inspector general audits. So we have to be really accountable. Our funding partners, you can see, as I mentioned, that many of these federal agencies, in a typical year, almost every one of those gives us money in different ways. Some is appropriated. The EPA is usually our second largest partner, but we don't get any direct appropriations from them. We just do contracting, as I'll describe later when we get to the Great Lakes. We have a Great Lakes program with them, a Chesapeake Bay program, a wetlands program, etc. We also get a lot of money from foundations. Some of these you might be familiar with, like the McKnight Foundation, that support us as well, as the Initiative Foundations, the Kellogg Foundation, etc. Corporations, we have relationships with a lot of corporations throughout the United States and some foreign corporations as well. Our biggest corporate supporter is the Walmart Corporation, which gave us $35 million. We went to them with an idea of trying to offset all of their properties because, you know, they're a big box retailer, and so they added up all their property, and they have 286,000 acres. And so we calculated it out and said, you know, we will protect 286,000 acres, if, wow, you know, with $35 million. So that's been a really successful program. Anyway, in our essence is what we do is leverage funds. The darker orange on the bottom is the federal funds we received over the years, and then the lighter color is the amount that we've leveraged that.
Excuse me, is that for the central region?
No, that's for the whole United States. We have the highest ratings you can get from the various charity organizations that assess charities. We have 92% of our money that goes directly to our mission. Our grants administration, which is primarily what you guys are interested in, is we've made over 9,500 grants to 3,000 organizations in every state in the United States and 50 countries. We put about $1.5 billion on the ground. In Minnesota, we've made 242 grants, 118 grantee organizations, and about $31 million.
Can you give me some examples of the 224?
Yeah. Actually, I have examples of all. I have a list of all the grants we've done in the last 5 years in Minnesota. And sorry, if anybody wants it, just let me know. I'll make a copy of it and send it to you. But I just didn't think about it. I didn't think there'd be this many people out on a Sunday night. What we do, the way we manage grants is we issue requests for proposals. That's the beginning. I think that really when you do grants management, or grants, I guess I should say, there are really three elements to any grant. There's the first part is soliciting grants, which is really important, and people often kind of ignore that. They sort of assume a grantee, but I think it's really important to solicit grants and work really hard. The second is decision. Everybody wants to be involved in the decision. And then the third one is grants administration, and nobody wants to do that. But what we run is essentially a grants factory. We make probably at least 600 grants every year, so we're always, you know, always making grants, and we think we do a really efficient job of it. Usually for our grants programs, we have expert advisory committees. One of the other little novelties about our organization is when we make a grant, we have to notify Congress that we've made that grant, whatever congressional district it's in. They get a letter and they get to comment on it if they want. So that we go through that. We notify applications of the award decisions. We make grant agreements. We do media events and press releases and talk to the unsuccessful applicants and explain why they did not get their money. I printed out a few copies of this too. Again, sorry, I didn't know you need more. But the way we do our grant making is we have an electronic process. So what you do is you go to our website, which is nfwf.org, and then you apply all through there. And what I did is, for some of you guys in the commission, I printed out just the whole process so you can take a look at it. It's relatively easy, but you know, there are always people who have some difficulty with it, but I just wanted you to see how it all works. And if any of you want to do that, you can go to nfwf.org and go through the process. We can do two basic approaches. The first one is a lot of people want to do pre-proposals, you know, a simple two-page proposal that you can kind of say yes, no, so that people don't have to go through the whole work of doing a big proposal. So you can do that. And then if you do that, then you get a little code. We send you a code if we want you to continue. And then you can apply to the full proposal. Other programs, we just do the full proposal process from the beginning and don't have a pre-proposal. So that's another option. We like to work with our grantees. One of the things that troubles me is when organizations don't really bring in the grantees. Our approach is not to try and winnow out as many as possible, but to bring in as many as possible. So what we do is we have things like a grants library. All of our grants that we've made over the years are in our grants library, so you can look them up, see which ones have been successful, try to figure out why, all that kind of stuff. We sometimes bring all of our grantees together around a particular geography or particular subject. Last summer, we brought all of our alternative agriculture grant people to Minnesota from all around the country and talked about what was going on in the alternative agriculture. Those are the kind of things we do. Monitoring and assessment is really important. We're putting more and more time into that. We try to do that for program improvement. If you are an organization like ours that does a lot of grants in conservation, you eventually can learn certain things about it. One of the things we've done really a lot of is make grants to organizations for sign-ups for conservation programs. Like, we'll make grants to, like, I think probably the most we've made is Pheasants Forever has probably gotten, like, 8 grants from us on signing farmers up for NRCS programs. And eventually you start learning, you know, what works. And then we try to convene people to figure out, you know, how we can get more people to do that. The other thing we do is sometimes we'll hire an outside research firm to go through it and find out what are the things that are working, what are not, so that we can communicate that to our grantees as well. In Minnesota, as I mentioned, we have a central partnership office. We only have 2 of us here right now. We have one woman who's working for us, and she just got a job with the Walton Family Foundation, which is the Walmart money. So we hope she remembers us fondly. And we have personal and positive relationships with agencies throughout the state of Minnesota and NGOs, businesses, et cetera. As I mentioned, we have made $30 million of grants here, and we have several existing programs that are relevant to Minnesota. I'll just go through these real quickly. One of our programs that we have is the Arcelor Middle Great Lakes Watershed Restoration Program. I was mentioning that one of the things we try to do is try to get it to leverage that federal money. We started the Great Lakes Program with $500,000 from EPA, and then we brought in Fish and Wildlife Service and Forest Service, and then we brought in ArcelorMittal, which is a big steel company, the world's largest steel company, and they're giving us $700,000 a year for the Great Lakes work. They have some mines up in northern Minnesota on the range. Another is we have an Upper Mississippi River Watershed Fund that we started with the Forest Service. We're focusing a lot on bottomland hardwoods in that program, and we make grants of about, I think it's about $500,000 a year, right?
Correct.
NRCS, we have a program, the Conservation Innovation Grants Program. This is a little different from our other programs because NRCS has a Conservation Innovation Grant Program that's $20 million a year. They've had a lot of difficulty in administering that, and so they gave us essentially 3/4 of it, and Todd and I manage that program nationally here from St. Paul. Finally, we have a really small grant program that we really like a lot. It's with Minnesota Waters, and what we do is we give them a little bit of money, and then they, in turn, grant that out. Usually it's like $2,000 or $3,000 to a local lake association where the people are working on, you know, trying to improve their lake, plantings and stuff like that. But we think that's a really good program, even though it's quite small grants. So why partner with National Fish and Wildlife Foundation? We think low-cost professional management, responsive grants management, one-stop shop for grant applications, efficient delivery of public and private funds. We notify Congress, and I don't know if that's important to you. We're non-controversial, and because we don't have members and we don't have, we're not an advocacy group or anything like that, and we have a local presence and local experience.
Just a question, when you're saying one-stop shop, does that mean you have a local presence in every community where they could go, or this would be You'd have to go to a website.
Yeah, it's a website thing, yes. What I meant by one-stop shop is that one of the things that we like to do is bring together all these different programs. So, for example, hopefully if we work with you, we could find opportunities to connect with our SLOR Middle Great Lakes program or the Upper Mississippi program and try to build up all those things, because you have the same interests in the state as we do. We don't cover fully the whole state with those programs, but we do grants in the Prairie Coteau in southwest Minnesota and northwest Minnesota with prairie chickens, all over the place. It'd be really good if we could, work together and enhance that. Any other questions? Yes?
I'm looking at your very detailed sheet here, but I noticed the release of 80 to 120 greater prairie chickens. And the price tag is $25,000, $50,000. Yeah. Can you explain why the cost is?
It's expensive birds.
I know they're good birds. But
how fat were they?
They were a
chicken in every pot.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this a chicken in every pot?
Yeah, that's a habitat project, including the release of.
Okay.
Augmented.
It said, yeah.
I mean, maybe you could do that for turkeys. I'm not sure. No, it's mostly habitat work.
Mike.
Mr. Chairman, Don, I see you have a lot of different grants from several hundred thousand dollars down to a couple thousand. Unless I missed it, every grant is to an organization.
It's correct.
You do not grant, if I wanted to apply to do some restoration on my property, how would that be handled?
Well, we can do that, but it's a little bit more, it's a little bit difficult, because as a 501c3 organization, we have IRS regulations and rules, and so it just makes it more difficult. I'm trying to think if we've done anything. I used to be at the Denver Foundation, which is another community foundation. We had that. We had a system for handling that. I don't think we've ever gotten a request. Serious request from a person, so I don't think we've even set that up. You can do it, but it's much more cumbersome.
Mr. Chairman and Don, mm-hmm. More cumbersome on the foundation's part or on the applicant's part?
No, on the we'd have to go through some some additional administrative burdens to ensure that worked. If you are an organization that we're giving to, a 501c3 organization, you have your own separate board of directors, you have your own, financial statements, all that kind of stuff, so it's all right there. Now, if we wanted a grant from you as an individual, then we'd have to ask, okay, can you give me your tax returns, all that kind of stuff that you may not want to give us. So there's just a lot more burden to it.
Bob? Mr. Chair, Don, a couple questions. You obviously a big source of your funding is public funding, mm-hmm. So accountability is probably a crucial thing for you. If you don't mind, just say a little bit about how it is you assess a grant recipient's accountability quotient, if you will. And then the other question I have is, you are governed by a board, mm-hmm. on a national basis, and what obligations would you have to them that might be, and it's hard to predict this, but might be a consideration for us as the obligations to your board and this council in the state of Minnesota would interact. I'm not sure if you're making sense, but there could be a circumstance where there's a conflict between the mission of your organization and how the board views it as to what it is we're trying to do.
Well, I can't think of a circumstance where there would be a conflict between us and our organization and your organization. And the reason for that is because we're both interested in conservation. I can't think of one. Okay. But what we do, because, if you go to our website, and look, apply for a grant, you go through there. At any one time, we probably have 70 different programs that we're running. And so with that huge number of programs, what the board is doing, they're not, I mean, we send them a list of grants all the time, but really, they're giving us a direction. You know, and if we reach an agreement with you, we would go to our board and they'd say, yes, we agree with this. And every year they would adopt the, you know, they would say, you know, yes, we'll continue to do this. But they would do it essentially under delegated authority. You know, they sure. wouldn't, they don't get involved in it.
And my other question on the accountability side.
The accountability, what, you know, we ask people for a large amount of data. You know, like I said, like tax returns and all that kind of stuff. But fundamentally, you know, we work with so many organizations, we're really familiar with it. If we don't, we have to investigate. I'm trying to think of the... we just had a grant that kind of flummoxed us all for... Let me just borrow that just a second, because I think it was just one of the last grants. Where you know, we had a new organization, we had... let me see. Here's... Well, it was one of... It was the... you know, there's a Minnesota Valley... I can't think of the name of it, but it's a special purpose district that was created by or the legislature allowed to be created. And we hadn't even heard of an entity like that before, so then we had to go back and do the research and figure it out. You know, but in general, you know, when we worked with thousands of organizations, mm-hmm. I mean, most of them we've already worked with that apply to us. And so, you know, we're just sort of updating the information. We're pretty familiar with the different organizations.
Now, yeah. A couple questions that I have.
Sure.
When Bob refers to accountability, when the LOHC, you know, puts together the appropriations and we fund our small grants program, and somebody applies to you, you know, one of the things that I think of when I think of accountability. Okay, so they've showed you what they're going to do. And we're going to have some criteria that they have to meet, and we're going to give you those criteria.
Right.
But when they say the grass is planted, okay, yeah, we planted the grass. Do you drive out to the spot and look and say, yeah, the grass has been planted? That's the kind of accountability that we would like to see.
It would be rare for us to do that unless it was a big grant. If it was over $100,000, we would definitely go out and see if the grant was planted. But, you know, our experience is you don't have to do that. What we need to do is we need to find out that the grant is a good grant at the beginning. You know, let's take the grass is planted thing. I'm a lot more concerned reading the proposal if they say we're going to restore a prairie and we're going to have, you know, four grasses and six forbs. I look at that and say that's not a restored prairie. If they tell me that they're going to do, you know, 10 grasses and 30 forbs, then I think that they know what they're doing. So, you know, we try to ensure that they follow that. But driving out, I mean, that would be so expensive. You know, we just haven't had that kind of problem. Whenever we go back, like I said, many times, if we've made, you know, 20 or 30 grants in an area, we will hire an outside evaluator to go out and look at our grants, and then they go out there. We've never found, you know, any kind of a fraud or any kind of a, you know, we've had people make mistakes, but we've never had a fraud or anything like that where we've, you know, gotten snookered on a grant.
Would the Small Grants Committee of the LOHC, would they have any interaction or could they have any interaction with you? So you collect all these proposals, and we're estimating, hopefully, that you're going to get hundreds of them.
Okay? Right.
They're going to have to get needled out or thinned out to, you know, the ones that score the highest. Okay.
Yeah.
Would the LOHC be in any way involved in guiding you as to which ones ultimately got funded?
And how would
you go about that?
Remember, what we are is a fiduciary. Remember when I was talking about making grants, I said there's soliciting grants, decision-making, and then management. We're the factory. We're the management. You know, we don't want to decide. Personally, I would, but you know what I mean? Our organization doesn't. The reason that we make $80 million worth of grants every year is because we let other people decide. We are the vehicle. I mean, look, we're getting all this money from the feds. You think the feds just say, see you guys, goodbye, have a good time? No, they really want to be keenly interested in what we're doing. So if we work with you, we're a fiduciary to you. You know, you guys set the rules. If you say, okay, every single grant you drive out and look, we're going to drive out and look. Any way that you want, you say, we want you to just do the grants management. We will review it all. We'll make all decisions. Okay. If you say, you know, you guys can make the decisions, fine. You say, we want a committee that we will name, fine. We are a grants factory. We are trying to do things for conservation. We're trying to grease the wheels of conservation. We don't have to do everything ourselves.
One of the things that we had talked about, and this is something that Don did tell me earlier on, and we talked in our last meeting, and we're going to cover that when we talk about items of consensus, you know, about having this kind of, this application granting be kind of a round-robin process. And we talked about, you know, collecting applications for a month, funding them for a month. And when I did visit with Don on the phone, he indicated that you're probably better off to do that on a quarterly basis to ensure that you get enough proposals to come in that you can fund, you know, the very best of those. But the question, what is your, under just the administration of the grants, what is your cost to our organization for that?
If we're just basically going to do the simple grants management and, you know, a little bit of solicitation, I mean, you can't ignore that, it'd be roughly 5%. 5% of the total amount of the grants. We could get more involved in the solicitation particularly, which I think would be really a good thing, and then we have to charge you a little bit more. But fundamentally, it's about...
Is it conceivable that you could find other dollars that would match into our dollars so that our grantees would then end up with... Or at least our fund would end up with more money?
Well, that's what I was saying about those particular programs that we want to run, like the Upper Mississippi, the Great Lakes, those kind of things, yes. You're going to run into a problem, though, where, you know, there's so much money for Minnesota conservation right now that it's going to be challenging to have a meaningful amount of match. I mean, look, I talked to you about our Upper Mississippi program, which is just a new program, so it's pretty small, but that's $500,000 for, you know, five states. So, you know, it's going to be hard. I mean, we want to build that program, we will, but... you know, I can't promise you big match because, you know, you guys have so much money.
Les?
See if I can put it a different way, a hypothetical. Here, Don. If we had, say, 40 projects that encompassed $4 million in the small grants programs, and you would look at those and pick out which ones that you would possibly match, and I think I saw a one-to-one ratio there. So we're really looking at you as primarily a leveraging organization to help us with our funds, to make us stretch our funds a little bit further. And would you then partner with some of the other groups like SWCD, NRCS, Bowser, DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
Yeah, we can work with any of those groups and do. The match that we have are... The dollars that we get from Congress, the $25 million roughly in a year that we get from Congress, by statute, that has to have a one-to-one match. But other programs have no match, two-to-one match. Again, you know, we're a fiduciary. If you choose to work with us, you set the rules. You used to say, you know, 10% match, one-to-one match, whatever you want. But... You know, match should be a minimum, too. You know, people will come in with more, and that's a good thing. But I would just say that, you know, my experience shows that in states where there's a lot of research, like, for example, the only other one that's really comparable to Minnesota right now is probably Missouri. And, you know, they have the ability to match. You know, they have a lot of money in the conservation too. But you know... if you are putting out so much money, it's really hard for you know, there's just going to be a lot of match sucked into to some of your projects, you know. There's not going to be that much going on. I don't know if I'm making that really clear, but in other words, like, if you essentially give big projects to Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Nature Conservancy, you know, then a lot of money is going to be sucked that way, and there isn't going to be that much match for some of the smaller ones. That's what I'm trying to say. So,
question on your what you would charge to understand it properly. If a small group comes in and says, you know, we've got a project here that's $10,000, and the LOHC decides to give them, you know, participate and give them say $30,000, and that $30,000 would trigger a leverage from someplace else. Would you get a percentage of that leverage money?
No.
Okay, so not total project then. All right.
Mike, Mr. Chair and Don, how long from start to finish does it typically take from the time someone submits an application online to the point where they actually are the recipient of some grant dollars?
Okay, well, rather than when they submit it, it's really the deadline. You know what I mean? Because they can submit it any time.
So I submitted on the deadline date. So
right.
Assuming that.
Well, a lot of that depends on, you know, on this group, because you have to review it in some way. So I would say the fastest that would be feasible is like 4 months. I think that would be pretty good. 6 months. To, you know, 4 months to 6 months. 6 months would be, you know, very doable. 4 months would be pretty quick from the time that date is hit.
You know, Mike's question is, you know, my question is a little different. From the time that the deadline passes till they're notified that they have been approved or not approved. Obviously, then it takes some time for them to actually get the money. But if the council was time sensitive, and I mean the projects were. Accumulated, and we looked at them. I mean, that notification period from the time the application deadline to till they're notified. Because to me, that's what's most important to a small group.
Right.
If they say, "Well, I'll get my money for 4 more months," but we got
right.
it. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that turnaround time to me is. Did you bring a copy of your application of the
yeah.
of the page of the application? What page is that? You know?
Well, I just. This thing is the whole process.
Okay.
As if you were going to apply
okay.
every single mouse click. Okay.
Is it real cumbersome or no? We can suggest.
You can actually one of the things in here is there's weeding out processes and stuff.
That was another question I was going to have. We've been taking proposals from parks. I'll just use parks as an example. Would you weed that out so we wouldn't even have to see that? Is that what we're talking about here? Because that's not part of the LOHC charge. Is not parks.
We would
because
something
most
like
generally,
that, some yeah. filtering measures, could they be built into our application?
Yes.
Most generally because you can't hunt and you can't fish
right.
in most parks, so it just
right.
eliminates them, but yet they
exactly.
still come.
Yeah. There are two ways you can do it. Like, for example, if you're trying to apply here and, you know, let's say that you try to apply to this group, and your address is, you know, Chicago, Illinois, you know, doesn't work.
Boom.
Okay. But then why don't you tell them a little bit about how you do the Great Lakes and, you know.
review process?
Yeah, and how you
we have them. We have a two-stage review process where we initially send out all the proposals to state representatives, send the relevant proposals to state representatives, get feedback back from them, use their rankings, forward them along to the funders, and then we make the cut from there. So in that process, it's pretty easy to winnow out the ones that don't qualify based on the state reviewers' comments.
Would you state your name for the tape, please?
I am Todd Hogriff, Assistant Director.
Thank you, Todd.
With working with Donna.
So I'm not following that. I'm on the Great Lakes Commission,
yeah.
by the way. So if there's a... invasive species thing, and with the ballast water they're talking
yeah.
about a lot now. So if there were some grants available for that, how would that work? You would send the information off to the...
Well, he's talking about our reviews. I was actually going to ask him a different kind of question, which is because we have so many different parties in that process, you know, we get money from ArcelorMittal, which can make a grant to anybody. They're a private corporation. Then we have EPA, which has certain rules. Then we have Forest Service, which has certain rules. So what happens is Todd will read through all these proposals and then say, well, this is one that the Forest Service can fund. This is one that ArcelorMittal can fund. This is one that EPA can fund, that kind of a thing. So we do that, too. We have the the winnowing out in the technical application, so to speak, and then we have these other ones. So, you know, like, for example, parks. You know, I don't know if that would, you know, we could put in there that says, you know, you cannot apply if you're a park. But, you know, that may or may not work. But then we read through them and say, park, no.
Will you ensure that you'll administer a grant program to the statutes and policies for grant making in Minnesota?
Absolutely, we have to. I mean, first of all, we're your fiduciary. But secondly, that's what we do with all the different agencies, every federal agency. And I've really only been talking about our grants program, but we have this whole other side, which is the mitigation. This is the, you know, there's an oil spill in California, and instead of sending the money to the Treasury, they send it to us. And that's the same kind of thing where we have to spend the money from that oil spill in conformity with a decision of the United States District Court. So we have all kinds of those, too. At any one time, we probably have 200 of those kind of accounts. And Todd and I sometimes get involved in those and sometimes do not. We have, just an example, we have a fund called the Dakota Eagle Fund, which is simply from people illegally killing eagles in North and South Dakota, which at any time, you know, they're always trickling in. You know, we're always getting a $500, $700, that kind of thing. And then we find a couple projects that benefit golden eagle or bald eagle. But anyway.
Do you administer any programs that are not reimbursable?
That are not reimbursable?
That are forward-funded advances?
Well, for most of our programs, the way, you know, a grantee applies, and we, you know, assuming they get the grant, what we do is when we are contracting with them, we say, when do you need the money? And we pay it out in phases. So they would say, well, you know, we need, you know, the $10,000 to, you know, buy plants by April 1. Okay, fine. And then we need, you know, $25,000 by July 1 to plant the plants. Okay, fine. So those kind of phases. So what happens is, we give them the first check for the first phase. When they're done, or when they notify us they're going to be done, and so we send them the check for the second phase, and then we send them the check for the third phase. Sometimes, you know, especially small grants, we just do the whole thing. You know, they say, you know, we need it all right now. But we do that because federal law limits the ability of an organization to earn interest with federal funds. If you earn more than $250 a year, you have to file in all these incredible forms. So, you know, it's just a lot easier. Of course, now the interest rates are low. It's not as much of a problem. But at any rate, they, you know, we try to limit how much loose money they have through that process.
Are you paying against payables?
No. No, usually not. We can do that, too. I mean, remember, you guys set the rules. You can tell us anything. You can say pay in arrears against payables. You can say as soon as you approve the grant that pay them all the money. You set the rules. You can tell us any kind of system you want, and we will administer. We're a fiduciary.
So long as it's legal.
Right.
Any other questions? If your organization became the grant administrator for us, would you do that with existing personnel? Would you have to add some personnel? And would that person be somebody that knew the difference between Lake of the Woods and Lake Mille Lacs?
Oh, absolutely, definitely. First of all, we'd have to add a person because, as I said, we just lost this woman who went to the Walton Family Foundation, so we're going to have to add somebody. I can't guarantee that it would be a Minnesotan, just because, you know, when you hire somebody, I don't know if it's legal to discriminate geographically. I just don't know.
You have to hire somebody from Iowa?
Who knows? You know,
Senator, are you from Minnesota?
Yes, sir. No.
But at any rate, but that person would be here in our office in St. Paul.
And they would have some background in
conservation. We only hire people who have background in conservation. I mean, the background varies a lot. Most of my career was a banker, but for many years have been in conservation now. But
you are audited regularly.
Yes.
What's your most recent negative audit finding that worries you the most?
Fortunately, we haven't had a negative audit finding for probably 4 years. I'm trying to remember what it was the last time. Tell you the truth, it was 4 years ago, so I can't remember. But, you know, being that my background is banking, I've always paid a lot more attention to that. But we can give you all of our old audits and any of them you want. You can read through them, Bill.
Is there any more questions for this presenter? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Item number five. One of the things that in my discussions with Bill that I've had that are really where what we need to get to as the Conservation Grants Committee is when they write the appropriation, and decisions that have to be made is one, who do we want to administer it, okay? How much money is going to be in it? You know, some of the other items of consensus that we've come to, but it really is the big picture items that we have to finally kind of get nailed down. You know, and in our last meeting, and you guys can tell me whether you think that, I mean, if I heard you or understood the group as I caught it, was that we're going to have two tiers of small grants. They're going to be from the $0 to $125,000 category, and then there's another category, which aren't quite so small, from $125,000 up to $400,000, and that each of those categories are going to originally be funded with about $3 million each. That those funds would be broken out between fisheries, forestry, prairies, and wetlands, and that those funds would be balanced. We haven't determined exactly how often that would be done, but if 6 months into the small grants program, one bucket was empty and the other three were full, that those funds would be rebalanced back across all four categories. And the same kind of balancing would happen between the large grant money and the small grant money. You know, if the small grants money was completely out of cash and the larger tiers were still had a lot of money, that would be rebalanced as well. That the matches would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 1. That was an item of consensus, I think, that we came up with. The couple of items that I think are left that need consensus, and we can add to that list, is one, is who's going to administer it, and what are our scoring priorities going to be? What method of scoring each application to determine whether it cuts the mustard or not? Is there any other items of contention that you think?
Oh, Scott, there's just a couple of things. I was putting down some notes as I was listening to the presenters, and things that I've been questions that I've had because we have legislation, as Mike well knows, going to one of the meetings, there was some concern about publicity and whether we're getting the information out. And so the few things we're writing down is that really need to keep this program streamlined. It's got to go from us to the recipient back and forth, and it can't be too many partners involved where we lose sight of what's going on. It's got to be very cost-effective. And the things that I see that in order to make this all work, we have to have a localized unit to provide publicity, education, information, so it's a one-on-one basis. People can talk to people instead of having to go on a computer and do a web an application. I really feel strongly that people need to have a presence. We need to have some technical support. Otherwise, we won't know what the projects are and what the basis for the projects are. One-on-one assistance when people do applications and not just have to do it through a computer. I think a uniform selection process, like the ranking system, is necessary. Project oversight, so that there's somebody local who can, or at least is able to go out and see projects, tell them what's going, what's right, what's wrong, and be of assistance. They need to be there to certify completion. They need to do some periodic compliance inspections to make sure that the taxpayers are getting their money's worth. And they have to have proof of accountability. And those are the things that I was writing down that we haven't got all those answered in my mind.
One of the things that we did talk about at the last meeting was that as a prerequisite to even applying for a small grant, that you either had to have an area fisheries, DNR fisheries personnel, an area wildlife manager, or an area SWCD officer sign on that they approve of the project that you're trying to move forward. Obviously, if somebody comes up with a fisheries project, they say, "Oh, we really want to fund this fisheries project," but the area fisheries manager says it's rotten and he doesn't support it, then we shouldn't fund that. But if we're looking to get that biology background, we as a prerequisite to applying, when they submitted the application, they would have to submit a copy of that letter of approval from one of those three people, and that would give us, you know, the biology oversight. You know, if those partners are at least aware of the project, I mean, I'm guessing that they might be at least limitedly involved, if not intimately involved, as that project goes forward. You know, and that was one of the other items that I did have as an item of consensus, is that they would have to get signed on by an area professional, you know, in that area of expertise. Obviously, you wouldn't go get the fisheries manager to sign off on a grass planting. I mean, you'd have to go get the appropriate person to do that. But what other items for the bill do we need that have to be decided? And we're supposed to make our presentation to the full LOHC on what day did we decide?
Yeah, Scott and members, Bill and I were talking about this. We'd like to have this committee make its recommendations to the council on March 16th. So we're going to be spending the 9th working on our spreadsheet, hopefully adopting a spreadsheet, but we also need to have the elements that are required for this program for the rider language discussed on the 16th. So that will give you one more meeting.
Bill, what things have to be determined?
Well, we have to determine who's going to run the program, how much the program is going to be, and if there are any selection criteria that we want to ensure are applied. We need to place those into the law. We can't come back afterwards, I don't believe, and add those in.
So is it reasonable that the members on the Small Grants Committee could, sometime between now and our next meeting, if we do decide to meet again in the 2 weeks from now, when on a Sunday night again, that we could each try to come up with either an example of or our own or whatever, so that we could combine all of our scoring criteria and come to consensus on what we want that to be? I mean, we could obviously get a Bowser scoring system, and you know, we could go to this one or that one, and everybody could try to come up with one and put that together.
Might ask Bill if there is some kind of a template we can work off of. Start someplace and then work off of, instead of all of us going in different directions. I'm just thinking.
I'll see what I can find on. I'm sure there are. I haven't looked for them. I'll see what I can find on templates of criteria for natural resource-oriented grants.
Let me just throw a couple things out, being a political person here, for what it's worth. And, I mean, we're looking for buy-in, getting more legislators to buy in on this. That's going to be a challenge, I think, folks. We're going to be fooling ourselves if we didn't agree with that. Whereas part of the process is, did you notify your local representative, your local senator of this program before you applied, or what, that you were applying? Would that be helpful to the process? Somebody up in Moose Lake decides they got a program, and I don't even know who the representative or the senator is up there. Would they be notified that you are applying for this thing? Would that be of any importance to the group at all, getting them to...
You know, Mike, I'd add to that, depending...
or just inform them of such?
Based on what size. I mean, would you want to be informed of a $5,000 grant for a tree plant? Is that something you would want to know?
Yeah, I think, Senator, maybe what you're saying, you know, one of the things we talked about is, as one of our criteria for other grant considerations we ask is what government involvement has been. And so I think that would be... If I were applying to whoever it is that we have to administer it, one of the things I'm going to look for is one of the things I'm going to try and get is letters of recommendation, you know, from whoever I can, from the city council, from the county commission, from my local legislator, yeah. Saying, you know,
make them part of it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Let them help own it.
Yeah, exactly.
Own its success. So I think that that's So I think that having one of the criteria for a grant recipient
yes.
would be to demonstrate that they have public or government agency involvement and support.
Notification
and
or support.
Support.
Okay.
Something.
Scott, I guess I get a little bit of a concern with that, Bill. But does that end up then with the legislators talking to each other and it becomes a matter of, gee, how come he got you know a project going through and I didn't? And I don't know. Ideally, we don't want to have to pay attention to individual House and Senate districts, I don't think, because that really can compromise the validity of our work and so forth. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I see that with mixed reactions.
And then if you make that a scoring criteria, yes, I got the City of Worthington signs on. I mean, is that part of the scoring criteria?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
I don't think it should be, because, I mean, I live in Worthington, Minnesota, that has a lake of 800 acres right in the middle of it, and they have absolutely ignored that for 30 years. I mean, I couldn't get the city council to sign on to that project if they thought it might cost them a nickel and a half. And so, to me, if that has anything to do with scoring criteria, I would like to see that.
No, I wouldn't want it for scoring, but... Getting to finish that what I'm going at is here. Our first go around, we talked about this in a big group too, is that regionally, we really need to get our fingers out throughout the whole state for it to be a, not that we have to sell it, but it's just going to be a good buy-in thing to spread it around as best we can. We can't be nailed down to it, obviously. You know, 5 year and only $1 million over here.
Well, first then, Terry.
Scott, I'll bring this up only because I did send you a copy and I sent Bill a copy. But I knew that when we had our last meeting, I presented the fact that Bowser has something in place already that sort of fits where we're going. May not be perfect, but I did put a spreadsheet together, or an informational sheet to tell you. But the one thing I found was they have an application process, which is one page, front and back. That's their application for doing this. They also have, for the if you use a process in place, like the NRCS, here is a ranking system, points based on how close to other wildlife management is, how close to other environmental aspects you're going to get into it. They have the complete scoring sheet in Minnesota laid out, the template and everything to be able to copy what they've got to show how the process is done, and it's a computer-operated one, so you can put the thing in. Somebody will sit down with you on a local basis. It fills it in, ranks it, so you know exactly where the point system comes from. And then there is another. This is the one which is a conservation plan, basically, that they use that has all the rules, regulations, bylaws, what you can use your money for and what you can't use it for and what happens if you don't do it properly. And you sign off in the back that says you're going to abide by the law. And the cool thing I found about this is it does, their program does everything we want it to do. And that is just a matter of how do you take money from this, get it from A down to B and back. And they already have their state or agency. They're accountable. They have local presence. They can help with on the ground and administering on a local basis, advertising on a local basis, outreach efforts on a local basis. So there was just so many things. And I couldn't find. I went through every agency and everything that's already out there, and I couldn't find anything out there that really comes close to being almost in line with where I think we want to go. We did hear some concerns last time that there's maybe not every soil and water district is prepared to do it. Doesn't mean they have to. Could be a voluntary basis, and if one county doesn't want to present, to go to the next county over, who's very gung-ho about doing it. But I only presented that because after the last meeting, did some research, and I couldn't find anything else other than this one that has everything pretty much already set up for us, except for our tweaking.
Mr. Chair,
I
agree with you heartily, Wayne, on that assessment. And I would look at, when we're administering the grants, that we might be looking at multiple levels of administration, because when we get grants coming in through the small grants program, we may want to pass some of these on to the National Fish and Wildlife Federation or the Southwest Initiative to provide some matching funds. So I could see that we'll be looking at different administrative levels of some of these grants programs, because if we're doing a grant strictly from the council to the smaller proposals, most of the time the SWCD and Bowser can very adequately handle those. But some of those grants we may want to be looking at cost sharing, and that's when we raise it to a different level and bring in the other organizations. And I don't think one organization is going to fit the bill for everything. We may have to look at multiple organizations.
I think it's a fair statement that what we do in year one isn't, yeah, it isn't locked in that that's, well, we're not making a five-year commitment to that. You know, one of the things that, the people that I've talked to, okay, and this is a just a perception of mine, and I'm not saying that it's completely accurate, but when you look at, when I think of hiring, we're hiring a totally independent third party to come in and operate our grants program. To me, I think that that gives you the greatest possibility of getting the maximum number of people to apply. You know, some people have had great relationships with their local SWCD. Some people have terrible relationship with their local. If you go to somebody that I mean, obviously you've been around and or a third party has experience in doing it, but vast majority of those people will not have worked with them before. So you take a look at us, and I think web-based application has great opportunity. You can go on, there's four or five pages, people pretty much, you know, what is it, the average person's on online 6 hours a day now. I mean, most people know how to do that. My question comes down to is, what can we do to get the maximum number of people to apply, to have it look, to one, have it interpreted and distributed as what do I want to say? There, nobody has any agenda in the process. It's just, here's the facts, administer it by the facts, no emotion involved, you score high, you get funded, you don't score high, you don't get funded. You know? And so, you know, what we do in year one, we may very well change in year two or three. But, you know, when we start out, and the other issue that we have at hand, and I don't know what the answer to this is, can we get a bill passed that uses an independent third party to administer our small grants program? I mean, will the legislature step up and say, no, that's going to be done in-house? You know?
I would envision the bill that finally passes, it may not be the one we recommend, will appropriate the grant money to a state agency for an agreement with a third independent third party to run the grant program, so as to ensure obedience, that's really the wrong word, but I'll use it anyway,
compliance
with statute and policy occurs. And it's another layer or level of accountability that the council can use to honestly protect itself. It is the requirement of that state agency to make sure that the program runs right in the first instance.
I think from a public perception point of view, how successfully we are at running the small grants program will probably be 85% of all the talk that happens in the state of Minnesota in the next year. 80% of that conversation will be people that are affiliated with this program. I can't say enough how important it is, I think, that we get as many entities involved as possible, and to do it in a manner that I would like to see the small grants program, if it starts at $6 million this year and it runs out of money, and then next year it's 10, and if it runs out of money, I mean, if a large chunk of the LOHC's money is getting put in on the ground projects through a vast number of people, I think that would be a great outcome. So we have to decide who's going to administer it and what the scoring priorities. That's the only other two items of consensus we need before we can write a bill.
You don't even have to do all the scoring priorities. You have to identify any ones that you want to make certain are used.
Bob?
Just a couple of thoughts. You asked kind of the question of how it will be received by the legislature. My instincts tell me that familiarity is a value. Having an awareness of who the organization is and experience with them will, as compared to someone that has never done it before, they're not familiar with. And so I think that we should acknowledge that. for, in large part, I think part of what we have to deal with here is the question of make versus buy. Do we want to make a brand new organization that does this, that has all of the, you know, online capacity and so forth? There's a cost associated with that, doing it. There's a risk that comes with it. This opportunity as well, as compared to buy. In other words, take a pre-existing organization and utilize them, kind of a little like, you know, Wayne was talking about. And I think I would, for this, at this moment in time, I would err on the side of utilizing a previously existing organization, one that is already experienced, rather than create this out of whole cloth, either by ourselves through the council and there, and then have to do an appropriation bill for those dollars. I'd also think that just from a numerical standpoint, if we have two grant pools, one from 0 to 125,000 and from 125 to 400,000, if you just do the math on that, that's a potentially 30 grants or 31 grants if they maxed out on all of those. So I think we should just be mindful of that as how it would be received, because I think it's conceivable you could get, you know, 24 grants at $125,000 and be done. And then we might miss opportunity at that lower end where we probably get as much, we get $125,000 of goodwill out of a $10,000 grant. So just to be aware of that. But it, so on the side of, if we're going to look for organizations that do it, I think the criteria that I think are organizations that are effective, that have a track record, they have a strong sense of accountability built into their process, their experience from a conservation standpoint, and obviously an accountability track record that backs that up, and they have the ability to communicate. They're good communicators, so that they can solicit lots of grants, they can tell a good story, and show success. And so I guess I would, at this point, consider those state organizations that have some experience in this realm, rather than, because I think that that'll be more familiar to the legislature as they consider what it is we're talking about.
And so, Mr. Chair, just to build on what Bob said, those state entities would be the Department of Administration. Help me out, Bill. I'm just thinking out loud. Bowser, it sounds like.
DNR.
Okay.
I suppose Ag might have some ability to do it, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we maybe have three or four different possibilities within state government to actually administer this program.
That I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Soil water districts are under Bowser.
They're under Bowser.
Yeah, so Bowser, Ag, DNR, admin.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I echo what you said about to recreate an organization like this where we've got SWCDs in 88 counties around the state, and a lot of counties have two or three of the offices. I think it'd be a major expenditure that we would be spinning our wheels trying to get through. So I think using an existing agency, and I still think we need that higher level when we do the matching grants that are going to be adding money to what we have.
Well, the question I have for you, Les, is when you say you bought, talking about building it or going with some, you know, I mean, obviously Bowser has done grants for a long time, but this independent third party that we're considering is also doing lots and lots of grants. I mean, they're not going to have to go out and learn how to run our grant for the first year. I mean, they're going to know how to do that. I'm not following the one knows how to do it, one doesn't scenario, or we're building one or buying one versus creating one.
Mr. Chair, when you're looking at a organization, and I'll just take a good old Otter Tail County, that individual, that small grants program applicant is going to go to the local source. He's not going to get on the computer and go for it. He's going to go for the local source, and he's going to look for the direction and guidance to take him through the program. What happens from that point on, then, I think, is up to us whether we want to continue to turn that over to one of the other organizations in the state to add grant money to that and administer it at that level.
Well, my question, Mr. Chair, then, what would the DNR charge? What would it put administration charge, and what would Bowser charge?
Jim.
Scott, I'm going to agree with you. I think we're going to make a major mistake if we pick one of these existing state organizations. Now, that might fly better with getting this passed through the political process, but in my estimation, it's not going to help us with reaching out to the people that we want to do business with to get them to apply for these grants. There is a lot of territorialism. There's a lot of relationships built up, good and bad, with all these organizations. And I think Scott's absolutely right. A fresh new organization starting from scratch with no history behind them is going to be much more advantageous as far as bringing us to the state. It's a new program. I think we should have new, fresh ideas. There's no reason to use one of these existing agencies. I think either the agencies we saw here this afternoon or this evening are more than capable of doing this for us. And like they say, Scott said, if it doesn't work the first year, we can always go in a different direction. But I think if we start out with that old thinking right off the bat, that's going to be a mistake.
Right. You know, the people that... Go ahead, Jim.
I have another thing. I might as well throw this in, and we're all in. But yesterday at the Wetland Summit, we had a chance to talk to a couple people. One thing that came up is from local sporting-based organizations is opportunity acquisition. And that being that critical pieces of property come up for acquisition that may be a two-week window that goes on auction. And these smaller groups need some kind of ability, resources to act quickly to pick up this these acquisitions. That one of the groups we talked to was the Swan Lake organization, where you know you're right in the heart of some of the highest priced farmland in the country. This land comes up for auction, and you know if you're not ready to move in 2 weeks, it's over. Seeing as this is the only fluid pot of money we might have to react to that, those types of things, is it possible to incorporate those types of emerging issue type purchases or something into this pot of money, or am I just clouding things?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Jim, you bring up a really good issue, and it's, I don't know if you talked about it at the last meeting, but I haven't heard anything about rights of real property being discussed in the small grants program until now. But that's a really good question we need to think about. So, for example, let's say a landowner, instead of a purchase, a landowner says, I have a situation, I need to donate or sell this property, I need to either sell the easement or sell fee simple ownership. Is that something that people envision this small grants program would help accommodate? Because that whole acquisition process, whether it be through an easement or an entire... The fee simple purchase, the pretty complex one. We don't have the capacity to do that. Who would we direct them to? So help me out a little bit. Are we envisioning that those types of requests could also be channeled through the small grants program if it was under the $400,000 cap?
There are two ways that this issue can be addressed that I know of. One, if an organization has an appropriation that's under agreement and wants to go to auction, we have historically said so long as your property you're buying qualifies under your agreement and deliverables, we can reimburse you up to the appraised value, not using the auction price in the appraisal. Okay? There's a little risk there. I think that it's possible, but there's a risk also to design a rapid grant program that could take that into account. But there's no guarantee. There is a guarantee when the organization has an appropriation sitting there. The guarantee is we'll pay you up to the appraised value.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I guess a more fundamental question is, just because some property is for sale doesn't mean it's a property that's going to have a great conservation benefit. And whatever, if this program includes acquisitions through easement or property, there needs to be some process by which a parcel is looked at and said, yes, it has the ability to contribute significantly. I mean, you think back 2 weeks ago, Monday, when we had all those wetland and prairie proposals, and I felt a lot more comfortable with some proposals because of the due diligence that's been given to
the willing seller. There are a lot of willing sellers, but not all properties fit the criteria for certain organizations. And I just want to make sure that if we have that, there's some process we can screen through. And just because it's a great piece of property in the seller's mind doesn't mean that Minnesota says that's a great piece of property for habitat or for conservation purposes.
We have talked about an emerging issues fund on the LOHC board in general, okay? And I don't know exactly where that's at. But if that existed on that level, would it be necessary to have an emerging issues account in our small grants program? I mean, most of the time we're looking at acquisitions. Most of the time those are going to, there's only going to be little acquisitions or little costs. Would we need to maintain two emerging issues funds? Or could we just submit those in some fashion to the whole committee on a timely basis? Oh no.
Well, Mr. Chair, one thing that we may want to do is consider through the existing acquisition delivery programs. If this council were to make some recommendations for example, the Wildlife Management Area Acquisition Program, we could, as part of that appropriations, set aside some money for, they've got a list of properties that somehow work their way to the top through a scoring process. The Fish and Wildlife Service has the same. In our appropriation, we could set aside a pot of money, some money, for properties that are, once-in-a-lifetime processes that they could feed in, run through their filters of screening. Does it have that acquisition, that habitat value? And if so, draw from that as opposed to, kicking someone out of that normal, the list that they're on right now for acquisitions. Just a thought.
So you're saying if that project could score high enough to go to the top of their list, then we could have an appropriation set aside for that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that we don't miss those opportunities. I mean, I think everyone around this table agrees we don't want to miss those great opportunities to acquire a property that has great habitat conservation value. But at the same time, I wouldn't be in any position to judge, and I don't think any of us individually, but some entity that has a process set up for making those screenings could do that. But what I'm saying is, as part of any appropriation we might make to an acquisition program, we could set aside some money for those unforeseen, once in a lifetime to be evaluated. And if so, if it was felt that that was, yes, a high habitat quality project, that they could fund that particular acquisition.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I think I agree.
I think that would. Plus?
Back to your comments, Jim, Mr. Chair, Jim. Maybe we're talking about two different things here, in administration and implementation. If we expect a grants administration to do the inspection, qualification, design, actual implementation, follow-up inspection, I think we're going to be absolutely impossible, creating an impossible task to recreate that organization over. If we're looking at an administration over existing organizations that have that capability, then we're on the right track.
If you could just back up, Les, I didn't understand you, that whole process, because if I did understand you, I don't think that we're going to be responsible for all those parts that you just brought up. I mean, we're not going to design these projects.
We can't.
No, we don't intend to. No.
I mean, we expect the group that comes forward to do all that. All we're going to do is say, yeah, that's a good project. Here's the money, and then some type of follow-up that we know, things got done. But I don't think any of us expect that every project is going to be out and inspected and made sure. If we're giving money to the Douglas County Pheasants Forever chapter, I mean, we expect Pheasants Forever to have some accountability. We expect, these groups to have some kind of accountability. I mean, I don't think we're going to be doing all these processes that you think we're going to be doing.
Oh, absolutely not. It's impossible. But let me pose a question to Don. How much of that implementation, you mentioned one very important thing of creating partnerships with existing organizations, and there were multiple ones. You wouldn't be getting into it. You wouldn't have the capability of doing all the implementation stages of that. That would be an impossible task for you, wouldn't it?
You mean implementation of grants?
Yes.
we would be involved in the grants management, but, yeah, you know, essentially it's all solicitation, overseeing the decision, and really grants management.
And one part of grants management is accountability, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
So you guarantee that the good is produced.
Yes, we can do that. Maybe I'm not understanding exactly what your question is. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, we make, you know, we make thousands and thousands of grants, and, you know, like I said, every year we're subject to the General Accounting Office coming in and examining us and figuring out what happened to that money.
He also said that if the grant is over X amount of dollars, that they would actually do right. a site
yeah.
visit.
A site yeah, the audit. Bigger ones we do.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we... Oh, no, sorry,
excuse me. And if you want us to go out and see every grant, we can do that. It's just that it'll cost us. Mm-hmm. And we don't think it's necessary, but if you think it's necessary, we will do that.
You know, the two items of consensus that and who's administering our grants program is probably going to be the most difficult item of consensus to come with. But I get back to this unaffiliated third party. Everybody that I talk to, and I talk to lots of people at Hunt and Fish all the time, it's just the area that I live in, and everybody says, yeah, well, that dedicated funding, that's just going to be the good old boy club. The DNR is going to get all that money. You know, no, you know, it's never going to get where it's supposed to go. And all of a sudden, you bring in somebody that even if they do a fabulous job, if they appear to be part of the current bureaucracy and old school, whether the perception in the public is correct or not, that's the perception that we will have. Now, we may only have our grants, I'm not saying we're going to, but if our grants program is administered by an independent third party, that may last exactly 1 year. It may last for the full 25 years of the LOHC. I don't know. But I don't want to give all the naysayers, we've got plenty of naysayers in the, out there already, more fuel to say, yep, it's just the same as it's always been. You know, and if we can be fresh, if we can be, I mean, obviously these people, whoever we would pick, isn't new to the grants administration. I mean, we're not hiring the somebody with 1 year experience. I mean, but we would have the ability to say, you know what, we heard you, okay? We understand and appreciate rank and file opinions. We're going to try this avenue and see if it works. And if it doesn't work, we'll do something else the next time. But I think being with an independent third party is critical to the success from a public perception point of view and stakeholder buy-in.
Mr. Chair, it has to work the first time. We there's no do-overs.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we really need to success this right out of the chute.
Well, I don't mean that it fails the first time. I'm saying if we run it the first year with 90% success and we think we can do it with 100, then we could make a change in that. Certainly don't think it's going to be 100 or 10, no. You know.
Well, I'd also say, I just keep coming back to this, make versus buy. If we're looking to have a brand new organization be created for all the reasons that you've described, Scott, I think that there's a transitional cost and a development and infrastructure building cost that goes with that that I think will be create problems that we may be able to avoid in other circumstances. For instance, one of our options is the Department of Administration. They have experience in doing lots of different grant stuff. They don't have any experience, as far as I'm aware of, in conservation management, conservation grants management. And so they would have to build the infrastructure about having an awareness of what it means to interact with the local soil and water conservation district managers, to have a plan be developed and be able to assess that plan, you know, is not unreasonable. So I wouldn't put them at the top of my list as an organization that has that pre-existing experience in an area that we have an interest in. With all due respect, I don't know that your organization does at this moment. You would have to build that capacity, and that's a consequence to the council and funding sources that maybe is not beneficial to us. Don's group, they got it already. You know, what Wayne talked about, they already have it already. So, from my own mind, I've already sorted a little bit, and I do think it's important for us to be successful from the very beginning.
I agree. Wayne.
One last comment, and I think it's exactly why we're here. All of us were appointed or given a shot at the job in the council because we have some experience in outdoors and conservation. I certainly wouldn't want to bring somebody into the mold that had no experience at all in outdoors, and that's what we're looking for. If we try to create something brand new, we don't know what this new thing is going to look like between now and when we start spending money. I have a perception that if we can find something that's existing that looks and feels right, and we demand a certain amount of credibility, and that they go out and actually help promote the thing, I think it'll work much better than if we try to start something brand new. I always have some concerns because I've tried some things of my own in my workshop. First time around doesn't work very good. Usually after about three or four tries, I get it down. And that's why I have a concern, is making sure that the public does see this thing and we do it right the first time.
They say about Edison, we wouldn't have had the light bulb if he hadn't made mistakes. Yeah. Every mistake was the learning. One thought, maybe this is more of a discussion, Mr. Chair, than we have time for, but I'm trying to think if there's a model that achieves the multiple goals. I mean, one of the things I think I'm hearing some people say is that it'd be helpful for the council to have a lot of ownership in what it is we do, direction, ability to review and have some. What Greg Knopf would say is that, we can't direct and we can't appropriate, but is there some model of having the council or this committee provide oversight or direction or guidance, or at least just have a hearing to hear what whoever it is the organization is, so that we can express interest if there is if whoever it is we chose were to take a parochial approach that was counter to the folks you're listening to or hearing from. So I don't know what that model would look like, but that might be one approach to mitigate.
What, or Jim?
I might just ask Bob, do you think this would be, if we do start to acquire staff, that this would be one of their jobs, is to kind of watch this program in their regions? And, they would have some kind of oversight over this program, too.
Mr. Chair. Jim, I think they would have a role to it. But I don't think we're ever going to be able to be in a position where the council is the appropriator. We're not going to be able to write the checks and send the money out the door. We'll always be working through the legislative process. And so,
go ahead.
But, do you foresee that the council here is going to start to look at these projects and judge and grade these projects ourselves, or are you hoping that the administrator will do that?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, Jim, I think it's, I don't know, I'm making it up off the top of my head, but I think that I would hope that whoever the administrator is would do some initial screening. They would bring to us, the top 10 and a report. Maybe not, I don't think we're in a position where we, by law and the Constitution, can direct. But they can certainly, just as the Department of Administration or DNR or Bowser reports to a committee of the legislature, but don't, in the absence of law, have the ability to direct how something gets done, that organization would have, I would expect that they would have an obligation, and we would want them to report to us about how they're going about it. So there's an accountability element to it, at least from a public hearing and a public awareness to it.
Cool. And just to add on to that, my understanding from what we've heard before is the council can recommend to the administrative entity, but the administrative entity retains the authority to make the final decision.
To be honest with you, my instincts tell me, too, that as much profile there is behind this program for all the things you talked about, Mr. Chair, I'd be surprised, certainly at the get-go, that whoever, if it were Bowser, if it were DNR, if it were fill-in-the-blank organization, that they would be unmindful of the council's concerns. I think they would place an enormous value, because their success will come from the council's
contentment.
Very well said.
Darby?
Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to all of this, and I understand both points of view, and I'm really still not clear what really makes the most sense. I was very impressed with your presentation. You guys have been doing it. You got credentials that are sort of beyond question, and that that made a lot of sense to me as an entity that would meet what I think was Scott what you're looking at. But I listened to you less, and I think and Wayne and Bowser's got that. The fingers are already out there; they're in place and so forth. You know, questions about do they have the experience with the broad range of issues and habitat types that we're concerned about? I'm not sure that necessarily they do, and there may be an issue there. So I'm frustrated with myself in that I really don't see an obvious resolution that this is the better way to go as opposed to that. I think we're doing a little bit of guessing. An entity like them coming in, the legislators haven't heard of them, and so there's that question of who are these people and can they do the job. That's why I was impressed with a bunch of the stuff that you put on the screen. I think you can present a pretty powerful package here's who we are and here's our experience and so forth. But I'm still really... unclear that there's a real obvious best choice of the two directions we're talking about.
I understand. I'm listening to all sides of this thing, too, and the new, fresh, clear idea guy that would be great, too. We haven't really heard, we've heard from two people now, we haven't heard from the DNR or Bowser about how they would lay it out or what they could do.
We did hear from DNR.
I think you were gone.
Okay. And Bowser, I know, was at one of them, but I don't know if they particularly laid out the small grants program and how they would do it or if they did or didn't. But so what you get, that's what I get for missing a meeting.
One of the other concerns that I have, and obviously our LOHC committee has not made any recommendations. We're in the process of formulating those recommendations. But I know that in the meetings that I've sat in, Bowser came and made a $23 million presentation for RIM-WRP. Okay? I have no idea whether that's going to get funded or not. If it does, those people are going to be busy doing that. I read through some of our forestry proposals, which are going to be presented, and there's a bunch of potential pilot projects with Bowser and SWCD in all of those forestry applications. And I'm sitting there looking at that saying, I believe if the funding comes out even remotely like I think it might, those people are already going to have a lot to do, okay? If we go to an independent third party for our small grants program, they're not going to be doing a whole bunch of other things on top of what they're doing for us. So the question comes down to is are those local SWCD offices and Bowser in general already going to be, we've heard everybody's at capacity. Some people have a little more capacity. The question comes down to who has the best capacity based on the environment that we're going to be living in a year from now to do this program,
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, are we talking about both the small grants and the big grants here now, too, then, in general, as far as administrating them?
Mr. Chair.
This is not fair to say
and
that.
Senator, I don't think we've gotten that far. Okay. I think we are still at 30,000 feet, as best I can tell on this discussion.
Yeah. I would assume we were talking about the $0 to $400,000.
Yeah, well, that's what we're here tonight to talk about. I understand that.
Well, let me just, Mr. Chair, maybe to kind of further on Darby's comments, because I'm hearing both sides, but it seems to me that we're forgetting that there's still an additional cost of review, and that may be implicit if we run it through an existing state agency like the Department of Natural Resources or Bowser, unless they're willing to give us the time of their field staff to review these from zero to maybe 100-plus proposals, of which some might get funded. If we ran it, and Don, help me if I'm misunderstanding this, correct me, but you really are the granting agent, but you're going to be looking for us for direction about the quality of the proposal. And so if that's the case,
there's an additional cost in addition to contracting with the foundation to actually be the administrator. You're going to be looking to us for giving you a green light, a red light on a particular proposal, which means we're either going to have to go back and rely on field staff of the existing agencies and either pay them or assume they're going to give it that advice and time free, or we're going to have to hire that capacity and give that advice to you. So could you help me sort through that, Don? Because this is a real key piece.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about, just in a point of context, we could be having local clubs wanting to do some restoration work on a North Shore trout stream, for example, all the way to we're going to have a local conservation club wanting to help reestablish native prairie on some property, and a whole bunch in between, within the mission of protect, enhance, restore prairies, wetlands, forests, fish, game, wildlife, habitat. So where do you draw upon that expertise? You have the two of you and hopefully a third person, but certainly that expertise doesn't lie, unless you are supermen and women, all within the staff of three. You're going to have to go somewhere else.
Well, first of all, what I would say is that if you work with us, the minimum that we would expect is to work on criteria with you, and criteria for decision. We can make the decision on any of these things if we have criteria from you. If we don't have criteria from you, then, you know, we're fiduciary. We don't know what to do. So a minimum is that we would work on criteria. And, you know, we have at any one time probably, you know, 70 different programs. We have 70 different criteria. You can go through all of them and use them, develop your own, what have you. So that's it. But we find that, in general, it's better to create an advisory committee. We have a big staff. We have 90 people. We have PhDs in fisheries. We have PhDs in wildlife, et cetera, et cetera. And they can come out and work with us on this stuff if you're looking for pure expertise. But I think it's much better to create a local advisory committee that works with us. Maybe some of you, maybe outside, whatever, to reach those decisions. But we can do it by ourselves if you want.
Well, Mr. Chair and Don, I appreciate that. And the type of decisions I was thinking about weren't, you can't build into criteria. These are decisions based on a resource manager's expertise and understanding of the system. So, for example, if it's a restoration of a cold water fishery, no criteria is going to tell us whether or not that's going to succeed or have a great probability of success. That really needs to be obtained from a resource manager who knows those systems. And so that's where I'm looking for some guidance, how we get that into the system so that we're not just funding projects where we simply don't know what the probability of success is that will accomplish its objective, which I think is different than what you were talking about.
Okay. Right. Well, most of the – I mean, you can get – reviews, you know, and somebody said that, you know, that there should be some endorsement by the DNR or BIOS
exactly,
or some staff.
Well,
you can do that. And we do that, you know, frequently, almost in, you know, probably in almost all cases when they apply, they have to have local reviews like that. But when it gets right down to it, you're just making a judgment. And in most cases, when you read a proposal, like I said, you can make a judgment about the sophistication of proposals. If somebody's doing a prairie restoration and they're saying, we're doing four grasses, then I think that's not really a prairie restoration. You know, you can make those judgments. You know, you're not going to shoot at 100% no matter what, but you're not going to be 100% even if you go out and look at the project every time. You know, you just have to go with your gut sometimes. But we do have the expertise if necessary.
You mentioned the expertise. How do you incorporate the scientific expertise into your decision making or ranking or judgment?
Our program staff, in addition to Todd and myself, we probably have 20. It's a guess. We have, and I mentioned we have experts in all different areas that we can call on. And so, for example, if we have a prairie chicken project, you know, we have a guy who's PhD for birds, and we would send that proposal to him and say, does this make sense? You know, we have a big internal review process.
And who would see that response?
We would, or the advisory committee. Again, you know, it depends on how you want to set it up.
Excuse me, or on that point,
or the applicant would have included in the process the DNR fisheries right off on it.
Plan.
See, I think that solves a lot of those. I mean, I don't think an area fisheries person is going to, and I talked to a bunch of area wildlife managers, and I talked to some area fisheries managers, and they said, if somebody came to you and said, well, we've got this project, and we've got to get your letter of approval, you know, that this project is a good project, would you give us one? And they said, well, we certainly would look at the project and determine whether, you know, based on the information we have, whether that's a good project or not. He says, I certainly wouldn't go on the hook to, in any way, performance guaranteeing the, you know, that they did the work or did the guy with the backhoe do a good job. They wouldn't get involved in that, nor would they be responsible to mandate that it was completed. But that they would over, you know, look at that and give their yay or nay initially.
But would they do that gratis?
I believe they would. The people I talk to. I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to be a. I mean, I can't imagine one area manager getting 30 proposals.
Small project.
They might.
Small but just to be clear, one of our proposals, Darby, and the materials for tomorrow, they talk about the, you know, forest management plans for small family forests and so forth. And there's a cost associated with the staffing elements of developing what the plans are. I forget what their number was, but they had $600 per plan as an average or something along those lines. But so there is theoretically a cost.
And is it possible that in a grant application we could fund that cost? If we wanted a professional technical review, they'd apply for a grant and we'd throw in $300 on top of it for compensation to get the technical review?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe a question back to Don. You had thrown out, you know, obviously 5% of grant making is a typical administrative cost. Mm-hmm. Were you envisioning in making that general statement that would include some review of the expertise you have access to?
Yes.
Okay, so that would not be an add-on. That would be kind of the standard process by which you administer a grant now. You get a native prairie proposal, you send it to one of your scientific experts in that area or maybe a panel, and you get some review back.
Well, those are two different things. The panel's different. We would send it to our internal people, but not an outside panel. If you want to get into all the outside panels and stuff like that, that's different. If you have an advisory group to us, that's included. But in other words, if we're going to go out and find Joe Doakes, the big expert in white pines, you know, that's going to cost more. You know, if you want that level of detail. But if you want us to use our expertise within our foundation, our 96 people or whatever we have, that's fine. If you want us to use the advisory committee that you have chosen, that's fine. But you know, it's very expensive to go out and find, you know, the world's leading expert on bumblebees to review a bumblebee project. That's really difficult.
In a point of moving along, I guess I'm in favor of looking at that other neutral party. I think you're right, Mr. Chair, in that regards with the folks out there or what they're worrying about, and at least give that a try with the foundation of what of the grants that you have there, and plagiarize some of them, give that to a entity and have them work with it. I think we're off and running.
Wayne?
I just want to go through a project that's on the ground today, and because this makes a lot of stuff here is cleared up by what they've already done. Local organizations, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Minnesota Deer Association, Turkeys, all the guys got together and decided they wanted to buy the 100 acres adjacent to the existing WMA, Nutter Tail County. They went to the DNR, they went to Bowser, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They went to all those entities to got information. They did the wetland restoration. They planted the grass. They did everything according to whoever was the expert. Got the wetland restoration done. All they want to know now is who do they make application to get the money to actually get the final project done, get the purchase done, and give it to the DNR. That's it. All the locals have done it. All those people that are out there, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, DNR, Bowser, I mean, everybody is there and they're already on the ground, so we're not looking for expertise at a higher level. It's already out there. All they want to do is who is going to run the funds from here down to there, and then somebody certify that the project was done properly and comes back with that certification. That's what I see as this middle person, just that. People on the ground can do the rest of it.
pretty, Mr. Chair, if I'm not mistaken, but that process there now would come together on a process form, would go to whoever we choose. They would get the recommendations and would come back, and we would either okay it or not.
Yep, and they would just rank it, more or less. If there was 10 applications come in, say, is it close to another WMA? Has it got wetland qualities? Whatever we want to throw into
with
it.
All those entities in there approving
and they're all there approving it, so we know.
I think I've seen
a lot
of them on his presentation here, too, actually.
Just to push the issue a little bit, let me ask this question, Scott. In that proposal, the plan that Wayne's just laid out here, what is the beef? If DNR is the one that happens to be the right this check, or that Bowser would write the check, if because the end result would be that it's a plan that's put together with a whole bunch of partners, many of whom are probably part of that chattering class that says, you know, those damn guys at DNR, you know. So,
did you? I was going to respond. You were going to jump in.
You go ahead.
With me, personally, there is no beef, okay? I know tons of people that work in all of those agencies, and a lot of them are good friends of mine. My contention is the rank and file that are doing this work don't necessarily have all that same relationship, okay? And so, I had one guy 30 years ago think he got wronged. And he's done nothing but spent the next 30 years bad-mouthing this organization to every single person that even won't listen to him after he's told them 40 times.
I think I know him.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't have any problem with any of those organizations. To me, the most important factors are is one, what is the public perception, and two, the time frame or how busy are the people going to be that are doing it. You know, and I see Bowser and SWCD being very, very, very busy now, okay, without running or administering a small grants program. I think those people are going to be swamped. I talked to the SWCD guy in my office. He said, if you give us any more work, we've got to hire somebody. We're just maxed out. Jim.
Scott, and the other thing I'll say, Bob, is, you never want to hire an elephant to be a ballerina. And I think, essentially, and there's never a problem until there's a problem. And when you have a problem and you run into a big bureaucracy, invariably there's problems. I would much rather have to deal with Nancy if I was doing a project and I ran into a problem than try and go through the DNR's bureaucracy to get something done. And that's, that's where all these issues come up. Something happens out of the ordinary. Somebody gets sideways to somebody else. If you're dealing with soil and water, or DNR, I can tell you right now, you'd have problems. If we just have to call Nancy and say, hey, Nancy, you better straighten this out and quick, my experience, you're going to have a much better outcome that way. And again, I might just, anybody at this table, who has done a project? Who has done a project?
Okay. 5, 10, 15,
800 acres going, and we've argued with Bowser every one of the projects. We've argued with SWCD, every one of the projects, and the DNR, but we always got them done. We always got them done.
And I want to, that is the fact, but what happens is some people bump up against that, and they don't have what it takes to stay after to get it done. They throw up their hands, and then they spend the next 30 years bad-mouthing whoever it was it didn't work with. And I'm not saying that this other alternative is absolutely the most perfect alternative, and it's going to have zero problems. But at least we can start. You said it. Those people are still going to be involved on a baseline level in a lot of those projects. It's just that when they apply to a website. And I think web application is awesome. I think that is the greatest catch. Because if you want to go out and start promoting small grants, all you got to do is promote, go here, go on this website, here's the criteria, here's the categories, see if you have a project that fits in that. And I think that web application is absolutely paramount to making it work well.
Good. One question. I do a number of meetings in our area. Very few people come to the meetings concerning what I do because they just don't want to take the time to go to those things and listen. There's web applications available all over. USDA has got them. You can just about do anything you want. Nobody uses them. What they do is they come to the counter, they stand and they want to say, here's my application, please tell me whether I'm doing this right. And it's invariably, I don't care how much information you put out, that one-on-one, doing it for you on a computer, I can do it on a computer, but I tell you what, there's an awful lot of people like that one-on-one service, and I think that's what this organization and what our small grant should be all about, is giving that special service that we can give to people to make sure it does get off right.
Mr. Chair, just adding a step further in this, too. Once we have the project completed, then we've got the follow-on, taxation and maintenance. And that's a big contentious issue right now with the pill payments. It's a major contentious problem, and we've talked with the legislators to try to address it and take the issue.
Take care of it, don't we?
It's a major problem, and I think that's where a lot of the contention is coming right now from statutory policy associated with that. And the counties getting together with the local unit of government for the approval of those acquisitions is a major, major hurdle to overcome. 10 counties, state of Minnesota, have instigated the no net gain resolution where you cannot buy land in those counties. So it's we're posed on some further problems too as far as future after the grant is done.
I just in a point of moving it forward, I just to your point about what's wrong with the, okay, let's put it out there, what's wrong with the DNR, what's wrong with Balzer, what's wrong with SWDs? They are the status quo, and from Maple Grove on north to the north to the Canadian border, there is a problem there with the status quo, and we are a new group. We can have our own new rules. We're setting our own new rules. Let's get our own group, and I think that's a good idea, Chair. Mr. Chair.
A question to the group. Is this something that we want to formally decide on tonight, or do we want to just have had a good discussion and say that we will ultimately have to decide this at our next meeting?
Chair, I think this needs some hashing around, some chewing, and some digestion, and it's a big issue. And I think one of the things that I'd like to see you, Wayne, do is look at all the steps from the thought process to the completion and the follow-up. There's a lot to do in those. And once we understand that entire process, that what we have to go through with every one of these things, the organization to do those is going to take a heck of a task to recreate that.
Well, our responsibility is to figure out how to get it funded, okay? And somebody else's responsibility is to figure out the technical expertise and get it on the ground.
And that's why, excuse me, Mr. Chair. That's why I asked the other chair whether this was for the big grants or the little grants. I don't think these little grants are going to be that tough. With the kind of criteria that he's had plagiarized over there and given to an entity to carry out on our behalf. And again, getting back to where I was at, if we're going to ask the DNR or Bowser or the other ones, they're going to have a certain percentage of dollars. So I don't know if that's the issue.
Bob?
Mr. Chair, let me ask this question. does the committee think that we should make or buy? Do we give it to the Department of Administration for them to create and then run a program? The key word there is create. Or do we want to find an organization that is pre-existing that has experience and knowledge? Let me just ask that question first rather than having to settle on it. I've made the point that I think we should. I would pay a preference to those organization that's already up and running or has some experience. So at least I'm asking that question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll respond. I prefer to buy. If we can find a model that is workable for us, I would prefer to buy into an existing model as opposed to creating something from scratch.
Absolutely.
Bill, if you've got this thing that could you email that to everybody? Because I think it basically lays it out. I want to make this clear. I'm not like promoting Bowser. I'm not promoting SWCD as the ones because I'm politicking for them. I'm doing this because I've gone through and I've seen how they do it when things work, when the system works. It is perfect for what we're, I mean, I'm not saying that is perfect for what our intentions are. If you want to change the name from Bowser to something else, and so that it's got a fresh start, I don't care, you know. But trying to create something that's like this already is very difficult. It is. It's just made for what we want to do here. But if, with the animosities gone, if everybody said, "Hey, Bowser's a great place to work," everybody would love it, I think, because it does everything we want it to do.
Mr. Chair, just to add a comment, too, I definitely am not favoring those state organizations. What I'm favoring is where we're going to get our best bang for our dollar and where these taxpayers' money, this sales tax, is going to get the most efficiently used. And if we have to create another overlaying bureaucracy on top of this, that's going to be very expensive. And then we're.
Well, so my question, Les, is if the grants administrator is going to do it for 5%, mm-hmm. do you think Bowser's going to do it for less than 5%?
Let's find out.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, sorry, I think perhaps we have a consensus that it's a buy, not make. And if that's the case, then to move it forward. Maybe I would suggest that perhaps the next meeting, and I don't think we should wait till the 16th, but perhaps the 8th, the night before our next one, is to ask, you know, to this committee, DNR, Bowser, we've heard from Don, and if there are other, and let's ask them, if you ran this program, what would you do and how would you do it? And then I'd really want to hear from the audience, because at the end, these guys are the ones, you know, I bet we should place a value on their opinion, too.
On that point, should we carry, or should those organizations have that template in their hand before they give us their
maybe.
Proposal?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, simplified and plagiarized.
Somebody may else. I don't know who else has this, because if you think of what NRCS and Bowser does, they've been involved in so many different conservation projects. They do wetland restorations, they do seedings, tree plantings, just about name it, you know. And so, therefore, they have a ranking system already in place for these things. So we don't want to if we could borrow that, why would we want to redo it?
That's what you have, right?
Yeah, and so that's it here. And so it's basically, if we can use a lot of what they already have out there, then I think, no matter who runs it,
I don't think anybody has.
At least they'll know when they come to the next meeting, this is the plan. What can you do for us, and for how much? We'll deal with perception later, I guess, and that is an issue.
I mean, is that a waste of time, folks? I mean, we did the DNR as a full council, and I don't know if it's worth doing a refresher on that or not.
Well, if the council's agreed to buy, then the Department of Administration, which has no experience in conservation grants, would not be one of those organizations in the buy category.
Right.
Okay, so now you're down to an independent third party, a foundation to do it, whom we've heard, and we've gotten their figure. Okay, so basically we're looking at having Bowser come and tell us what they would cost to do. Who else is on the list that would come?
I don't know that, but do we have the authority of this group to make that decision for the small grants, or do we have to have the whole buy-in?
Well, Mr. Chair and Bill, I think what we want to do, I mean, I agree with Bob, we need to start whittling this down, and I think we've got a subset of entities that are potentials. And if we can, with the help of Bill, to lay out a series of questions that they can respond to regarding the process, the fees, certainly that's within the purview of this committee. What the full council is looking for on the 16th is a report from this committee saying, here's our best judgment about how this Conservation Partners program should work.
So get everybody to buy in.
Absolutely.
The council's just missing four of them.
That's right.
So basically we're looking at two entities. We're going to get a list of questions.
Yeah.
Okay, that Bill can put together, and then we're going to ask somebody from Bowser and a non-affiliated third party those specific questions, or do we who specifically do we want to have? Who does Bill need to schedule?
Well, I don't know. I'm sorry, Cordelia. Hi. I see you in the back there. Is this a business you guys are in?
I don't work for the Trust for Public Land, but I'm here as a citizen who helped campaign for the ballot measure and talked with a lot of local governments and others about how they were going to easily access this funds to get success and heritage and have that as soon as possible. So that's why I'm here today, just to listen and to.
In your experience, are you aware of organizations that might have the capacity to do this kind of thing that's a third party?
I can certainly get back to you and provide some information to Bill about that. Thank you for asking.
Bill?
One thing that's been
running through my mind as I've heard this discussion is we do need to keep in mind that in order to do this right, the entity running the grant program should not be eligible for the grants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just want to reiterate what I said earlier, which is I think this group, this committee needs to make a recommendation on whether or not acquisitions are going to be part of this program, because that is a very different animal the way I see it from a restoration project or an enhancement project.
I see acquisitions.
I think it has.
Small acquisitions, most certainly part of this project.
Yes.
In fact, all acquisitions that fall under the you know, so all the small ones and most of the ones that are under the 400,000, unless they're part of a bigger acquisition plan, would probably end up here, would they not? I mean, I see a 16-acre acquisition onto an existing WMA or a square off here or a 40-acre acquisition there. I think this is just prime for those kind of projects. And in fact, I think that's what most of them would be.
Okay.
So this, I mean, my philosophy is it would certainly include acquisitions if they're small enough.
Scott, I mean, yes and no. There's the issue of do we really want to? It's really just piggybacking on what Mike has already said, his concerns. At some point, I hope to high heaven, we end up with a strategic plan so we can really have a context within which we can do that. We're still, at this stage, sort of stumbling around. The point I'm trying to make is there may be some strategic reasons why any particular potential acquisition small is located right where it makes sense. Prairie pothole region, and it really works. And there could be others that are just, do we really just literally want to just sprinkle them as though randomly? I don't think so. We're never going to have enough money, as I realized after looking at all these proposals. $79 million is not but a drop in the bucket that we need. There may be some acquisitions that just don't fit the goal of getting the maximum we can get out of every dollar we spend.
One of the things
there needs to be some sort of screen or something.
One of the things I think will fix that, though, is that the DNR or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will not take a 40-acre acquisition. It will either be attached to another one or they won't take it. So there isn't going to be an acquisition for 14 acres out here in the middle of nowhere, because that acquisition will not be absorbed by someone else. So those small acquisitions are all going to be part of or attached to a bigger unit.
That's right. Good.
Scott, I think the other thing, though, too, Darby, is that, a couple things. But, I mean, I think our best source for knowing when these opportunities arise and people in these local areas, they know where these, you know, choice pieces of property are. And, I mean, they're going to have a much better feel and a much better opportunity to access these opportunities than we are or any of the agencies are. I mean, I think that's a tool that we just cannot ignore. And the other thing is, I mean, just because somebody lives in Maurer County and he doesn't have choice wetland habitat, are we going to say, well, you guys in Maurer County, you're out of the, you know, thanks a lot, but you know your wetlands aren't that important to us because you're not part of the strategic plan. I mean, don't we have some kind of responsibility to bring habitat to all the parts of the state, whether they necessarily fit into this grand plan or not? I mean, there is a geographic responsibility also, don't you think?
Flexibility.
And I understand what you're saying, but I mean, at the same time, you just can't isolate a big portion of the state because they don't fit into our grand, most strategic plan.
Well, all I'm trying to say is we do not have, big as 70 million, 79 million sounds, we do not have enough money to do all the good things in 25 years. And I think we just need to be a little bit concerned that when we do something, it really, when we spend money, it really moves something to happen. It's
And I agree, but again, you've got to remember, if you give people some money to bring in that area, that also gives you the opportunity to stir that interest and bring more money into that process.
So we're going to come up with a series of questions that are specific questions that we are going to ask a couple of entities to answer at our next meeting. Okay. Bill and me can work to put that list of questions together. If you guys have something specific you'd like, you can let me or Bill know. And then the two entities that we're going to ask those specific questions to would be Bowser and the National Fish and Wildlife Federation. Am I understanding correctly?
I think there's more organizations. Bill, I was trying to find it. You sent out a list of all the organizations that were administering grants. I can't find that in my document.
I'm afraid I've sent out so much stuff.
Yeah, I was trying to find.
Yes, you have.
But I think there's more organizations that we have to take into consideration, just those two. And I'll do the research. I've got it here someplace.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I'd also say that so I think the assignment is to think of other organizations, is what you're asking.
Well, and get them to bill in a timely fashion that they can get in.
I should have it by tomorrow morning.
I'd also say that we may want to reboot the DNR thing because, number one, Wayne wasn't there to hear it, but also if the questions that we ask are not ones that they've already answered, they're certainly entitled to have the opportunity to answer them as well.
We had a great discussion. Is there any more issues we need to talk to yet tonight? Ooh. Motion to adjourn.
We throw shoes at it.
There you go.
Just check your shoes in at the door.
Have you guys ever had any acquisitions?
All I got to do is search my computer for Wayne Ingram. He's all connected. We need to look at the
thank you.
So you get involved.
I'm on the
I had sent some of that.
I have a whole pack of stuff that I did.
Do you remember me?